again, everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast, episode 132. And we're here to talk about all things Orlando City and Orlando Pride. Joining me, Michael Citro, the managing editor and founder of themainland.com, is David Rowe up in Tallahassee having himself a day. How you doing, Dave?
I am indeed having myself a day. I won't burden everybody with it. Let's just say that I'd much rather talk about what we talk about on here than all the rest of the stuff that happened today. So let's just go for it.
All right. Well, typically we jump right in with Orlando City's latest game recap. We're not going to do that for a couple reasons. Number one, it absolutely sucked ass, and we don't want to talk about it a whole lot. But the bigger news this week, of course, is that Orlando City hired a new head coach in the person of James O'Connor. Actually, that hiring was announced on Friday, and the new coach was introduced Monday at a press conference at Orlando City Stadium. I attended that press conference, and James O'Connor is a guy, Dave, who was on everybody's list as a potential replacement for Jason Christ, not just because he has Orlando City ties, but because he was a successful coach in the USL, an extremely successful coach over the last 3.5 years with a very sustained success for a brand new franchise in Louisville City, taking that team to the conference final match 2 years in a row, the first 2 years of the club's existence, and then getting over the hump last year and winning the USL championship. And this year, prior to the change, the move to Orlando City, had Louisville City in the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open Cup. So this is a guy who has earned his accolades. He's earned his way into the conversation to have an MLS job. Not a guy who's just in the conversation because of his affiliation with Orlando City and having played here in the USL. And overall, you know, I think this is a potentially fantastic hire. But of course, time will be the judge of that. What do you think of the hire?
You're right. I mean, time will tell. We can project all we want. I like it. I think that a lot of the fans out there were wanting a bigger name, you know, hey, why don't we, you know, get somebody, why don't we wait until World Cup's over so we can get somebody like that? We're not going to get somebody like that. I hate to break it to you, but especially coming off an 8-game losing streak and going through two coaches in a couple years is not the thing that makes guys want to come coach here. At least, you know, somebody that's that big of a name. The thing about O'Connor is at Louisville, he did it on a shoestring budget also. So, I mean, talk about a guy that can make the most of whatever ingredients you give him. I think that bodes well for what he's going to have to do here in Orlando City, you know, given that these are the players he has and he's got to make the best of it. I like what I've heard from him so far. He's an Irishman, so I like him because of that. And, and of course he does have ties several times during that press conference, cause I watched it. He mentioned how much the club, you know, Orlando City means to him, as a person, as a player and as a coach.
Yeah. He said all the right things on Monday. Certainly, you know, things that you would expect him to say, some things you wouldn't expect him to say, like, the one thing that he said that stuck out to me that I didn't expect was that there were a lot of MLS jobs he would not have left Louisville City for. And, this was one that he couldn't pass up. Now, again, that could be lip service. It could be, you know, saying the politically correct thing or the thing that you want that you think that the fans want to hear. Maybe it's a talking point given to him from the PR department. Who knows? But he did say all the right things, hit all the right notes. He said, that the roster is one that he thinks has a lot of quality. Doesn't think that there needs to be much tweaking to the roster, which is a good thing considering that Alex Leitao has already laid out the fact that he wanted the new coach to come in and coach the players that are here primarily. You know, not that there couldn't be a tweak or two in the window, but that this wasn't going to be a rebuild situation. And, overall, I got a good impression from James in his return to Orlando City. And I think that he will work as hard as anybody that would have come in here. I think some of the names that people were throwing around were quite unrealistic. I just never could see a Scolari coming here, especially at age going to be age 70. I never thought of Carlos Queiroz, after what he's done and taking Iran to the World Cup and nearly getting through the group stage, just came like within a few feet and then a goal in the other game away from taking Iran through. He's going to have some serious offers. There's no doubt that he's going to be getting better offers than MLS level offers. So those two things never really made sense to me. Where I thought a shakeup after the World Cup might happen is that some of these coaches take jobs, other guys get asked to leave, suddenly they're available, and then maybe you can make something out of that. But certainly we talked about Caleb Porter as being a possibility. He was interviewed. We had confirmation of that. But ultimately, James O'Connor gets the job, and we move forward now in the James O'Connor era, and it's kind of exciting to have him come back, because it's one of those things where, if he comes back and succeeds, it's the old it's almost a local boy makes a good story. Although by way of Dublin, Ireland, and playing days in England, it's good to have James here, and I think that if he gets the buy-in of the locker room, I think that this is a coach that could surprise some people for years to come. He's only 38. He's only, 5 or 6 years older than some of his oldest players. He's played with Dom Dwyer before at the USL level. They won a championship together at Orlando City, so he'll have Dom's respect and Dom's buy-in, and I think that might help him in the locker room to get some of the buy-in from some of the other players.
I agree, and age only matters as much as what you do. So if he goes in there and what he's talking about tactically and as far as what he's wanting them to buy into as far as his system or how he plays, if it benefits them, they'll buy in. If it doesn't, maybe they don't. And, maybe that guy doesn't make the field. He seems to me to be the kind of guy that if you buy in and you work hard, you'll see the field. And if you don't do those things, you won't. So I think he's going to be very matter of fact about it. He's mentioned, all he's worried about right now is LAFC and getting prepared for that match. Well, when you're on a losing streak like we are, the last thing you need to be doing is going, okay, how many do we have to do to get to the playoffs? No, just worry about getting one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very much in that narrow mentality in terms of let's reach the short-term goal of winning the next game and worry about the long-term goals later. Let's set our sight on the next task. And if we keep doing the next task right, and the task after that right, and the task after that right, the long-term goal will take care of itself in the end. So, that's really how you have to look at this. The old joke, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Kind of thing. That's what it takes. And this team is only 4 points below the playoff line as we record this, and still half the season to play. So a long way to go. But you're also going to have that learning curve here the next few weeks. I'm not here to say everything's going to be fine and the losing streak's going to end at 8 and we're going to start winning from this point on. You have a coach who needs to learn his team, learn their abilities, learn what they can do well, what they cannot do well, learn what parts work best in the certain situations. There's going to be a process. As we saw at the beginning of the season with Savarese up in Portland, things were not working out with Portland early in the year. Now they're practically unbeatable, it seems like, at times. So I think that after this period of maybe 4 or 5 weeks, then you'll start to see what effects that James O'Connor will have on this roster. We'll start to see how things kind of shape up, and we'll see maybe potentially if there's some summer window departures and arrivals that need to happen to get the team to where he's dialed it in as well as it can be dialed in this year. But you know, at this point, hope springs eternal. We move forward with some optimism, and we have a coach in place. And, you know, that's half the battle is getting that new guy in. And then the next battle is getting him through that transition period.
Well, the good news for everybody is we've already been losing. They can't. It's not like they're going to lose. All they can do is keep losing, or maybe we get some results. So it's, you know, if we were going along like we were, having somebody in place that's going to, you know, hopefully motivate and turn things around is a lot better than not having somebody.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is rock bottom. Certainly the team hasn't scored in three games, so that's not good. But it's difficult to imagine that things will be worse in terms of the way that the results have been going. So speaking of results being bad, let's go ahead and talk about the trip to Atlanta on the weekend, the grand finale in the Bobby Murphy era, volume two. Could Bobby Murphy get that elusive first victory in MLS play? No, he could not. He came out in a little bit different shape. Again, he went to, it looked like a 3-4-3, but in practice it was more a five at the back kind of situation, trying to not quite bunker in per se, but to try to make life difficult for Atlanta in their attack. And, you know, in the early going, there was some, aside from 3 minutes in giving up a goal, there was some success there in terms of keeping some of Atlanta's more explosive players not moving toward goal, you know, moving laterally, passing backward and that kind of thing as they tried to probe and look for a way in. Unfortunately, there was that early cross in that, you know, skipped off Amro Terek. Just that little deflection kept Lamine Sané from being able to play it. And then Joseph Martinez slid onto the end of it just inside of Spectre and made it 1-0 very early in the game. Orlando City really never got in the game because, again, you give up that early goal, you sort of hang your head and go, here we go again. And you know, the players certainly will not admit to doing that. But, I mean, I think if you watch the game, you could tell that that team was deflated after that goal.
You know, it's human nature. When it happens that often and you see it, just like we as fans go, oh, here we go again. Well, they're going to have that same reaction. Yeah, they're paid to play. Yeah, they may be able to deal with it better than we can. But at the same time, you know, they're away. Atlanta's a big, rowdy place. And you're talking about one of the more dangerous teams in MLS as far as, you know, how they can score. So if you do then press harder, you're opening yourself up to, you know, counterattacks. And that's it's kind of the nature of the game at that point. And you're right. That first cross, those lack of inches that we seem to have whenever the ball is coming into the box on our defensive side to clear have bitten us in the rear end a couple times recently, and it did so again here.
Yeah, and toward the end of the first half, to the Lions' credit, they started to get more of the game and play more forward and get balls into the attacking third a bit. Just not able to get – really just never threatened goal all night. I shouldn't really say that. There was an opportunity later, but the game was already a couple of goals to the bad at that point. Came out in the second half, and Atlanta got two goals in a couple of minutes spurt. The first one just one of those counterattacks. The second one was another ball off the crossbar where their guy found it before our guys and put it in the net. So, just more of the same, really. But the whole night really was summed up in that ball that Yuri Rosell sent in, and Guzan had to fight it off. Falls perfectly for Will Johnson. All he's got to do is put it in a wide open net from about 6 yards away, and he misses the net.
Of course he did, because if he had scored that goal for the first time in ever, you would have been right about the score, the prediction. So that couldn't happen. So obviously Will Johnson had to miss that goal.
Right, and Almiron added a late second goal, and it ended up 4-0. It was really... it was the most lopsided score in the series so far. Probably not that unexpected given this the form that the team is in, the fragile psyche of the team, and the fact that everybody knew this was Bobby's last game as the coach, and you know, maybe in some respects had already checked out and tried to move forward and turn the page. So not a good look at Atlanta. But, you know, we don't shy away from picking a man of the match because, you know, just because something is hard doesn't mean we don't do it. So, Dave, your man of the match for Orlando City?
You know, that is a tough one. I'm going to have to go. I think I'm going to have to go with Mueller just for effort.
Yeah, I agree. Chris Mueller at least gave effort. I mean, you could still see signs of him being a rookie. He made a play late in the game where he did a nice job, got to the end line, nutmegged a defender, got into the box, and then sort of didn't really see his options. He had some, but he didn't see them.
Right.
And then ended up getting the ball poked off of his foot, and the chance went away. But that's the kind of thing that I think that as he grows as a player and gains some experience, he'll get in there. He knows he doesn't have time. He makes that move. He knows the next defender's coming. He'll quickly get it off his foot and find the open man. But those are the kinds of things that epitomized the night for Orlando City. But Chris never gave up. He really busted his tail throughout the game, and just for that alone, pushed him probably above everybody else on the field for Orlando.
Yeah, and I agree, obviously, but I also think that's one of the things that I think he'll be a very quick buy-in to James O'Connor's, you know, mentality, because I think he already has the same mentality. And I think with O'Connor's ability to develop players that he had in the USL, I think that bodes really well for Chris Mueller and his development. And, you know, he already gives 110%. So if he can do that and also get developed by, you know, Dom helping him out up there, and then also O'Connor, I think that, that could be a really good thing for him in his career.
Absolutely. I think that he's the kind of player that O'Connor will love because he doesn't shy away from the hard work. He doesn't shy away from – he never stops running and giving effort, and that's really a lot of the battle. If you outwork your opponent, even if you're not as talented, then a lot of times good things will happen anyway. So I look forward to that pairing for sure, of Chris Mueller working under James O'Connor, and I'm really anxious to see if some of these younger guys get more of a look under O'Connor, because Jason Kreis is well established. He knows that he trusts his veterans. He's always been a guy who trusts his veterans more than young players, you know, and to Chris Mueller's credit, you know, he won Jason Kreis over this year. And Jason Kreis
Right. Obviously
won over by young players. So, but I wonder what that says for a Pierre Da Silva, for a Cam Lindley, for a Hilo Rodriguez, right? Will they be given the opportunities where they weren't given them before? And not given them, they'll have to earn them. But I wonder if they'll be able to give the new coach that they are worth more of a look than what they've gotten so far. It really will be fascinating to see, you know, even though we want this team to be successful and we want the coach to do well and lead this team to victories, there's, you know, if you pull back like we do and you look at the whole overall overarching story, it really is interesting to see how everything develops and you know, whether or not the ship would have been righted a few more games under Jason Kreis, we'll never know. We only have the one thing that we have to look at is what's actually happened, which is that results did not come under Bobby Murphy. So it makes you wonder, maybe they could have gotten this O'Connor thing done in the background while Jason Kreis continued doing what he was doing. But, you know, in the end, it's done. It is what it is. And we move on. And we will not have Atlanta again until later in the year. We'll have them one more time. So
August 24th, I believe. I know that because it's my birthday.
There you go. Are you coming to the game?
I'm thinking about it, although now that I think about it, Atlanta, it's going to just kind of depend. I want my birthday to be a good birthday, so I'm going to have to see what happens between now and then.
All right, fair enough. So Bobby Murphy went 0-2-0 in the MLS play on this particular stint, and he went 0-0-1 in the U.S. Open Cup with a draw at DC United, followed by a penalty shootout win that allowed the Lions to move on. So if you look at Bobby's record in MLS play, he is now 0-3-3 and 0-3-4 overall. So not great, Bob.
No, but as we talked about last week, it's that's not really what he's cut out to do.
Right.
And you know, we know he won't be assistant coaching anymore with the senior squad, so it remains to be seen, you know, where he fits in at all.
Right, and thank you for bringing that up. The other talking points from Monday, obviously, are that Bobby Murphy and goalkeeper coach Tim Mulqueen will no longer be involved with the first team. I thought that was very interesting, especially with Tim Mulqueen not being involved with the first team any longer. And the wording of that makes me also wonder what maybe Bobby is being tabbed for a return of OCB when they come back next year in Division 3. USL Division 3 is the plan, according to what we heard this week. And also, James O'Connor brought Daniel Bird with him from Louisville City as an assistant coach, and more staff announcements are going to be announced. So that'll be something for us to keep our eyes on as well. So lots of news that came out this week. Dave, you want to talk some Orlando Pride?
Yeah, we might as well.
All right. You know, the one thing we can count on when Orlando City is down and out is that the Orlando Pride will never let us – oh, crap. They let us down.
You gave it a good try.
An 0-2 week at home this week, Dave, and a very a disheartening week in a lot of ways, because Orlando came out on Wednesday against the Houston Dash, and for the first – 30 minutes of that game just looked like they were going to win by 8 or 9 goals. They were all over the Dash. Some big saves in that half. Alex Morgan hit the post on a penalty, but just not enough good quality finishing on the shots, and that let the Dash hang around. And once the Dash made a tactical change, and Tom Sormani made a change of his own to try to counter that, it kind of was a back-and-forth game the rest of the way, and Houston did look dangerous at times, but it still seemed like the Pride would always win the game. And then out of nowhere, Kalia Ojai sends a cross into the box that ends up in the back of the net. Just a completely botched cross that wasn't an intention to score on her part, and I would totally give her credit if she had tried to score on that, because that would have been amazing. But it came in from the wing and just kind of sailed and tailed, and you know, I think personally Ashlyn Harris misplayed it in the air and probably could have kept it out, but it was a placement that was going to be difficult for her to prevent a goal, and she didn't. Jumped a little early, I think, in my estimation. Otherwise, maybe she keeps that out. Maybe she gets a hand on it and pushes it over the crossbar. But it's in the net. It's 1-1. And then just a couple of minutes later, just an unfortunate another Ojai cross into the box, and it goes off of an arm, Monica's arm. And now you got a penalty kick, and they step up and score it. And it's 2-1, and Houston Dash escapes with all 3 points.
Yeah, it was the most accidental goal scoring ever on Ojai's. It was like you said, if it had been intentional, it would have been an incredible shot. But sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, and she was on that one. The handball, you got to keep those arms in, whoever you are when you're in the box like that, even if you're looking the opposite way. Which is what happens. If you look, she's facing the other way from the hand that the ball hits, but the call was what it was. So, mm-hmm. You know, of course, all this is much ado about nothing if Alex doesn't hit the post on the PK earlier in the game. But just, you know, evidently one of those nights for the Pride, even though, like you said, most of the night they looked like the more dangerous team.
Yeah, it was sad. If you watched Belgium against Japan, Vertonghen's goal was much the same, as he headed it back across the front of goal, but it didn't go in front of goal. It went in the goal because it was just
right.
An offline cross that just was offline in the perfect spot where nobody could get to it and keep it out. So that's what happened on Ojai's cross as well, only hers was much further out near the sideline, and further away, and it was just it's a little upsetting when you see it. But you know that happens in soccer. Sometimes it's just not your night. I think Orlando had another shot or two that were saved off. There was one saved off the crossbar, another one saved off of the post. Marta almost had an Olympico on a corner on the first one. She puts in the corner, and it's about to go in the net, and the goalkeeper, Jane Campbell, gets a hand on it, pushes it off the crossbar. And then later in the game, I can't remember who took the shot, but it may have been Kennedy. I can't remember, but it was, again, a save, and it hit off the post after it was saved. So not Orlando's night. And, you know, credit Houston. They hung around and did enough to win, even though the goals were both incredibly generous gifts by the Pride. So you thought, well, maybe they'll get it together. They'll be a little angry. They'll come out with a little more fire against North Carolina Courage on Saturday. Nope. I will give Tom a little bit of grief here for his tactics. The Pride came out a 4-4-2 to try to go toe-to-toe with North Carolina, try to gum up the midfield a little bit, and it didn't work at all. The Pride's midfield got overrun throughout the game, to the point where they were trying to bypass it often. The Pride, that is, not North Carolina. They were happily just skipping right through it. But the... Didn't like the shape. Didn't like having Rachel Hill as a midfielder per se, or Marta up top with Alex. I am really of the opinion that Marta needs to be the number 10 in the middle of the pitch, allowed to roam, allowed to be free, allowed to have some creativity of where she moves, to distribute the ball where it's best distributed, because she has the best vision on the team. Rachel should be up top poaching goals, running past people, making runs, getting onto the ball. She had a heck of a time with Kaylee Kurtz, who had a great game. Credit to her. Good speed, was able to nullify Rachel Hill's speed, and that was able to keep her at bay. And in fact, she had a really, I thought, a poor half, and was subbed out at halftime as Tom made a tactical change. But everybody had a bad first half in that game, and I think that it would be hard to single anyone out who had a good half for the Pride, and especially in a three goals in 4 minutes period where the Courage just kept putting the ball in the net that should never have been on their feet. The first one was a poor clearance attempt by Monica and Emily Van Egmond that they end up putting in the net. The second one is a really bad pass from Allie Krieger that's just perfectly right onto the foot of a Carolina player, and then the next thing you know, it's in the back of the net off of a deflection off of Pollyanna, who I think didn't do a good job of closing down the shooter. Just a really poor game from the Pride overall, and although there were times when the Pride took the play, really, especially in the second half, at the Courage, you know, the Courage were absorbing that pressure, and the Pride never did really look likely to get back in the game. They looked like they might score a goal, and maybe even two, but I don't think they really ever were going to be a factor, especially after going down three goals in the first half.
Yeah, no, it was, like you said, twice in a week, it just was not their night. This game, more so their play, their shape. I think that Tom Sermani was the only one associated or watching the Pride that thought that Marta should be up top and Hill should be in the midfield, because like you and almost everybody online that I commented with or read comments from, that's everybody wants Marta to, you know, get central, let her create, let her do what she does best. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to have Marta, let Marta be Marta. So, you know, Tom, much respect for Tom. I think, you know, he just kind of chose poorly this go around, and maybe going forward, we'll see, you know, a different shape that will allow the Pride to utilize the offensive weapons that they have.
So he picked the wrong grail on the Indiana Jones movie.
Thank you for getting that. Thank you.
You chose poorly. And Scott Carnival wrote about that this week. That, you know, Hill, a lot of us think that Rachel Hill, with what she showed in Australia and what she's shown so far this year and what she showed in glimpses last year, it's time to just unleash her and just give her that starting spot and let her grow in the game from the beginning and up top where she's effective. Yep. And if you have an Alex Morgan and a Sydney LaRue and a Rachel Hill, that's a heck of a scoring line in a 4-3-3. And it's, you know, or you could even put Hill and LaRue out on the wings in a 4-2-3-1 with Alex up top, and you could have Marta in that 10 role in between Hill and LaRue. And I think that seems to be the kind of offensive firepower that put the fear of God in most opposing teams. You know, if you want to play Kennedy and Van Egmond in those defensive mid roles, or Danny Weatherholt, who's shown to be the best tackler on the team and the most physical midfielder on the team, maybe pair her with Van Egmond or with Kennedy in that defensive midfield. That seems to me to be the best solution. But I think that if you need some spark off the bench, some speed off the bench when legs are heavy, Chioma can run for days. So bring in Chi off the bench. I think that's the way to go. It was also disappointing for me to not see Camilla in the 18 at all on Saturday, because she still hasn't played. I don't know if she had a setback. I haven't been out to training to see, you know, to talk and see if she's, you know, had a little bit of a setback. But I think that if she is healthy and can play, you got to get her in the game. And I think this was an opportunity here that if she is healthy enough and was in the 18, down 3 goals in the second half is a time when you can give her some minutes and start to get her back into game shape.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, the only explanation would be what you're saying is, you know, maybe she had some sort of setback, or, you know, Tom doesn't feel that she's, you know, even 30 minute ready, I guess. But they needed something else that night, and you know, maybe it could have been her, even if it was just coming off the bench. But going back to the whole idea of a Morgan LaRue and a Hill attack, who do you defend?
Yeah,
yes, that's a, you know, pick, you know, okay, 2 out of 3, and then you, the other one's going to kill you. So it would be, I think you're right, it would be a nightmare for defenses. And I hope eventually we see something like that.
Right. And I also think if you have Morgan and LaRue sort of crashing into the area and Hill, that's going to leave some space behind for Marta to run into and take shots from the top of the box too. So I think it helps the offense. I'd like to see it. Maybe we'll see it this weekend against the Washington Spirit. We'll talk a little bit more about what the Lions and what the Pride have coming up this weekend. A little bit more after we get to our guest. Let's talk a little bit more about the coaching change and about the new coach, James O'Connor. We've got a very special guest who is very familiar with James O'Connor. We'll get to that interview right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, we're happy to welcome back a former Mainland staff writer, and he was our Louisville City correspondent way back in 2015 when Louisville City was the USL affiliate for Orlando City, and also a former Louisville City radio broadcaster. And why don't you welcome, please, Jeff Milby back to the program. Jeff, thanks for being with us.
Hey, I'm really glad to be with you guys. Glad to be back on the podcast. It's been a while. But should be enjoyable. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Jeff, obviously the big news we wanted to talk to you about this week is the hiring of James O'Connor. And I know a lot of people here that, you know, kind of became Orlando City fans after the USL days, which, you know, in fairness, is probably the bulk of Orlando City fandom, you know, across the board, especially outside of the city. They may not be too familiar with James O'Connor, but you have seen him from his infancy as a head coach. Why don't we start out by having you just tell us what you saw from James over the course of your time in Louisville and his time in Louisville?
Yeah, I spent 3 years around James and around Louisville City covering it for you guys, and then I got involved with the team. I was on the broadcast team last year. For the radio broadcast. So, you know, I spoke to James numerous times, interviewed him numerous times. I think first and foremost, the character about him that sticks out most to me was that he's just a very serious guy. Like, that's not to say he wouldn't have a laugh and then crack a smile every now and again, but his mind always seemed to be on the task at hand, no matter what it was, and he approached it with a very serious mentality, even if that was just speaking to, you know, like a 22-year-old kid writing for a blog like me. He was very serious about how he approached things, and I think that really is the one defining factor of his coaching style to this point in his young coaching career, only 3.5 years in. Really takes his work seriously, works incredibly hard from what I saw. Anytime I went to the stadium and went by his office, he was in there doing something, whether it was watching film or game planning or whatever it may be. The guy works just too many hours in the day for a good, healthy lifestyle, to be honest. But he's just that dedicated to the thing, you know.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. He obviously had some success at Louisville. Tell us how that how he built that program up over that period of time he was here.
Well, yeah, obviously tons of success. I think he surpassed anyone's really hope or expectations, certainly during his time in Louisville, winning the USL title last year and consistently putting Louisville at the top of the standings. Making it to the Eastern Conference Final each of his 3 full seasons there. And this year, even making a deep run into the U.S. Open Cup, the deepest run of any lower division team and the deepest run Louisville City's ever had. A couple of things stick out to me thinking about James O'Connor with Louisville City in terms of what made him successful. First of all, he really seemed to have a close-knit team culture that he built himself, or at least led anyway. Certainly a player's coach, James O'Connor was, and I would imagine is, as you can expect, not that far removed from his playing days only a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Fiercely loyal to his players, defended his players at any situation. You know, if anyone in the media was ever critical of a player, he got very defensive of the player and protected his players. And seemingly that was good for him because his players bought into what he was selling them, worked really hard for him, and that was something that he... I think implemented and wanted to see from all of his players was hard work. I mean, the guys out on the field just ran their legs off every night, and that's what he wanted out of players, guys that didn't come in and work their tail off, didn't last very long. You guys might remember Sidney Rivera back in the day. Mm-hmm. Didn't stick around, didn't make too much of an impact, and I think the thinking on him at the time was just he wasn't that hard of a worker compared to the other guys. The second thing, and this might the transition to MLS might affect this, but the second factor to me that made him so successful at Louisville was his ability to find talent. He brought guys in from tryouts. He brought guys in who were down in the NPSL who hadn't played fully professional soccer in a couple of years and turned them into big-time players. The last couple of years on the team, the two fullbacks or wingbacks, depending on what system he played, Oscar Jimenez on the left, Kyle Smith on the right, were both guys that he pulled out of the wilderness. Kyle Smith was a tryout player. Oscar Jimenez was playing down in Mississippi with the NPSL team, and both of those guys have been two of the better outside backs in the USL. Oscar Jimenez led the USL in chances created last season from a left-back position. And there are so many guys throughout Louisville City's tenure of 3.5 years now that James O'Connor really took from adverse conditions or unknown conditions and built them up into quality players that contributed to a quality winning team. So those are the two factors for me. I would say first and foremost, the team culture, which seemed very strong and is to this point in Louisville very strong. And secondly, his ability to find talent in places where you might not look for. Now, as I said, that might not translate to the MLS with a bigger budget, a bigger player pool to look for players in, but it certainly doesn't hurt to have in your back pocket.
Absolutely, and there's no scouting in this league.
Right.
Yeah. You actually kind of preempted me. I was going to ask you if you thought it would translate. I'm going to stick with that. You said it might not, but what's your impression having watched him and, of course, been involved with, with Mainland and Orlando City? Do you think that he can make that jump? What's your opinion of this hire for them?
I don't think there's any reason to think it wouldn't translate. But like I said, it's a different animal, really, when you're talking about bringing guys in from tryouts to perhaps signing a guy like Kaká or Sasha Kljestan or somebody like that, a big money player who was playing overseas for, you know, years and years and years. I do know this, and I will say this to James's credit. He's not going to be outworked by anybody if it comes to scouting a player. He watched film tirelessly, as you probably have to do at the USL level to find those diamonds in the rough. So given more resources, given more money, given a larger frame of reference to find players, I can't imagine James O'Connor won't find guys that fit what he's looking for.
Jeff, one thing that we've seen here in the first few years of MLS play with Orlando City is that Adrian Heath had his system, his 4-2-3-1. We've seen Jason Christ come in and keep that for the rest of the season that he first started, and then immediately tried to implement his 4-4-2 diamond. Sometimes it was a flat 4-4-2. And then this year, again, he started with the 4-4-2 and he switched to a 4-2-3-1 and then just basically stayed in that. One thing that I've seen from James O'Connor just in the few visits that he's had here when playing Orlando City B is that he doesn't really stick with just one particular system. I mean, he studies the opponent and kind of dictates his shape and his tactics on what he's seen in film. Is that sort of what we can expect moving forward with him?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say to that question of what formation he plays. I think he plays the formation that will win him the game, or at least the formation that he expects will win him the game. Similar to you know, you mentioned Adrian Heath with the 4-2-3-1. Obviously, O'Connor coming out of that system year one in Louisville back in 2015, it was mostly a 4-2-3-1. Year two as well. Occasionally, if they needed to like chase a game, he would throw a second striker on, switch it to a 4-4-2 that generally was flat. But last year there was a big switch for him tactically, to my eye. Back in about July, if my memory serves, he switched from a 4-back system to a 3-center-back system with 2 wing-backs, the guys that I mentioned, Kyle Smith and Oscar Jimenez. Mm-hmm. And he rode that all the way through the championship last season. And to me, it was because a matter of he had four center backs on the roster that were starting quality that deserved to be playing, and he wanted to utilize his tools in his bag, so to speak, as best he could. So I would agree with your observation, Michael, that more often than not, James O'Connor isn't tied to a particular system. He's tied to certain philosophical principles, I would say, in terms of how his team plays. He likes to give his attacking players room to roam, freedom to find the space. That's something he used to talk about a lot at Louisville City, a lot in press conferences, is finding the space. Space is a word that he uses a lot. And defensively, just being solid. Honestly, I'm not sure how often he really would send up his defensive midfielders into the attack. Those guys generally stayed back, but he let the attacking midfielders, guys like Brian Ombey and George Davis, in Louisville the last couple of years, really find the space wherever they needed to be. They would switch sides of the field together and just roam around freely. So I wouldn't say he's tied to any particular formation or system in that way, but he's tied to particular philosophies and how he wants to play no matter what the formation is.
You mentioned that he wanted to make sure he was using, you know, all the tools available to him in regards to his personnel. Looking at the current Orlando City roster, which, of course, the front office said he was going to have to use, which players stand out for you as guys that would be his type of guys?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, Dom Dwyer, he played with Dom back in the day, and Michael asked him the question at the press conference about his relationship with Dom Dwyer. And James O'Connor certainly has had a history in Louisville of having productive number nine forwards, going back to Matt Fondi, who was the MVP of the USL, set the league scoring record in 2015. Chandler Hoffman, who was into double figure scoring in 2016. Last year, it was a little bit more scoring by committee, but he still had a striker in double figure goals with Luke Spencer. So Dom Dwyer is obviously a guy that stands out. I can't imagine Dom isn't going to buy into what James wants to do there, having had that rapport with him. But being a midfielder by trade, James O'Connor was during his playing days. Again, another big name on the Orlando team, Sasha Kljestan. I feel like if they can get together and get on an understanding, get on the same page, that could be a very profitable relationship for the both of them, because Louisville City always had decent playing midfielders in the attack and defensively. Talking about guys like Aiden Quinn, Paulo Piccolo, both were captains at Louisville City. Speedy Williams, Magnus Rasmussen, all had productive tenures with Louisville City. So those are two guys off the top of my head, but I think generally speaking, it's more about the collective with James O'Connor. It's more about getting the entire team on the same page and, again, building that culture like I talked about with Louisville. I mean, everybody on the team in Louisville bought in, and when guys didn't buy in, they didn't last very long.
Well, one guy who's had some struggles here in Orlando since he joined the club is a very talented winger in Justin Merrim, and has recently had a few days off to take care of some personal matters. But he's back now, and he's a guy that I think can benefit from a reset. And I wonder if a guy like him, who likes to not only work in space and put the ball into space, but also likes to take on defenders, how might he fit into what James O'Connor likes to do?
Well, I would agree with you. I mean, obviously, Justin Merrim, talented in his past, his time with Columbus was pretty good for him. But O'Connor, generally with his wingers, his attacking midfielders, Mark Anthony Kay, by the way, you know, now with LAFC, kind of. In this last week has been getting a lot of the mentions in the press of, hey, this is the guy that O'Connor developed and sent to the Major League level, Major League Soccer level. He played on the wing with Louisville, in fact, in his 2 years with Louisville City. But he likes a winger that's going to be able to take a guy on the dribble and get service into the box. That was something over and over and over again that Louisville City did. I mean, it's not the necessarily most attractive way to play, but they would get the ball out wide and whip it into the box, get across into the box, and just see what happens, whether it was getting ahead on the ball or, you know, just put it in the mixer and see what comes out. So in that way, I'm not sure how well Merrim fits that sort of particular mold that O'Connor has had. But like I said, O'Connor's the kind of guy that is going to do what he can with the tools that he has in his bag. And Justin Merrim, if you can get him on the right page and get an understanding with him, is certainly an important tool in Orlando City's bag right now.
Switching gears a little bit, Jeff. Adrian Heath had his style of talking to the media and the fans. Obviously, Jason Kreis had a very different way of doing that. Tell us about James O'Connor and how he deals with the press and with the fans.
Well, I think, as you might expect, I mean, he's a young coach, 38, only been coaching for, you know, 3+ years now. And maybe this is a little bit of speculation on my part, but I can't imagine in his career playing in England as a player, he would have had to deal with the press as he did as a coach. So I always sort of had the assumption that he was a little bit inexperienced in dealing with the press. And I think we in Louisville certainly saw him grow and blossom the way he dealt with the press over the 3+ year tenure he was there. The last couple of years, especially, you would see him being a little more open and having a little more fun talking to the media. I mean, year one and year two, he's very closed off. He stuck to his cliches. He stuck to his coach speak. You couldn't really pry much information out of him after a game or before a game, for that matter. But last year, and from what I've seen this year, he smiles a little bit more. He has a little bit more fun with the media. I think he's starting to grow into a media presence. He's not a guy that's going to use the media. And you hear about coaches that will call guys out in the press to see if that'll, you know, get them going. He's never been that kind of guy. Like I said, he's a player's coach first and foremost. He's going to protect his guys, no matter the situation. In truth, to give you the whole picture, he's still a growing coach in that way. I think he really hasn't become a fully formed coach in terms of how he deals with the media.
All right, Jeff, before we let you go, I want to pick your brain here. I want to put you on the spot and say, knowing what you know about James O'Connor with Orlando City right now sitting 4 points below the playoff line, does James O'Connor get this roster, this team, above the line by season's end with half the season to go?
That's a tough question. and you guys have talked about this and written about this too. I think it really depends on how he gets the locker room to buy into his principles and what he's selling. My gut, obviously, I'm probably biased here because I was around him for 3 years and saw so much success out of him for 3 years. My gut says yes, he will get Orlando over the line. Obviously, there's talent. He said that in his introductory presser the other day, that the quality of the players is such that you'd expect that they'd be over the line. So I'm going to say yes, but it's a risky situation because you don't know how a young coach with an older roster. I mean, the USL guys are all under 30, well under 30 for the most part. George Davis was 27; he was the oldest player Louisville City had. With some older guys that are closer to his age, maybe there's some skepticism. But no one's going to outwork him. No one's going to try harder. And if you had to put me on the spot, I would say yes, he gets Orlando City into the playoffs this year.
All right. Jeff Milby, former mainland staffer and our one-time Louisville City correspondent living there in Louisville at the time. Thank you so much for being with us on the podcast, and we look forward to having you on again without it being so many years in between.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. Enjoyed it here. I want to say this before you get me off, before you stop recording. I really want to thank you for bringing me up on to the mainland back in 2015. You really had no reason to put me on. I had no resume at that point. but it opened lots of doors for me. Not that I've become, I'm not gone on to have a great, long, successful career yet, but I feel like I've got some things going for me, and a great big part of that is because of you guys at the mainland, and you particularly, Michael. So I just want to say thanks while we have people listening to us and it's on the record.
Well, thanks so much, Jeff. I appreciate it, and I definitely saw a very eager and intelligent person back then that I thought would do a good job, and you always did do a good job for us, so I'm not surprised that you've been able to parlay that into, you know, something that you enjoy doing for a living. So thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Good talking to you guys.
All right, big thanks again to our old pal Jeff Milby for coming back to his old stomping grounds and returning to the podcast. It was good to talk to him again, Dave.
Yeah, it was nice having the young guy come talk to the old guys.
Yeah, and Jeff was one of the first hires for this for our website, themainland.com. We weren't even on SB Nation yet when Jeff came aboard. I found him while we were still just a lowly free WordPress site, and I put out the call and you know, we need Louisville contributors. Yeah. And next thing I knew, this guy was contacting me. I didn't know him or anything, but he was, he was very eager. He seemed very intelligent, very plugged into, not only to the Louisville sports scene, but to MLS. And I thought, okay, well, it's a volunteer position. Worst comes to worst, I got to replace him, you know?
That's right. Yeah, he actually, I mean, it feels like I've been with Mainland forever, but, Jeff predated my arrival by a little bit too. So, yeah, but you're right. Good to talk to him, and I'm glad to hear that he's doing well.
Yeah, I think Jeff hasn't been on the podcast since, I think, August of 2015, maybe? I don't know. That sounds about right. But he's good to talk to him, and he's got a great radio voice, so I can see why he got a job in radio.
Yeah, absolutely. He's much better than I am. So
both of us. Yeah. He should be doing this. Maybe I'll get him back, and he could just do our podcast from now on.
Hey, we can just mail it in. That sounds great.
Yeah, well, I could use an extra night off. That wouldn't suck at all for me. Anyway, Dave, let's get to our mailbag. Of course, we have. You can ask us anything. You can just literally ask us anything, and we will, I don't know if you're on the Reddits, but they do it over there. They do the Ask Me Anything all the time. And
yeah.
You can ask people anything, and you can do that to us. You can do it a couple of ways. You can email us. That's the old fashioned way. Our email is themainland@gmail.com. The other way you can get us is, you can hit us up on Twitter. We are, @themainland. And be sure to use that hashtag, AskTMLPC. And those are the two ways that you can get us. So we'll start out with our old buddy Lee, who likes to do it the old-fashioned way with the email.
Okay.
We have some Twitter questions as well tonight. And Lee would like to know, who do you think will take home the Golden Ball trophy at the end of this World Cup?
Wow. Well, let's see. I mean, just off of what happened today, Harry Kane's now got, what, six?
Six goals. He's the Golden Boot leader.
Yeah.
Will he take home the Golden Boot and the Golden Ball, Dave?
I don't know. I hope not. I don't know. Who's on your list?
Well, if they go deep in the tournament, I think it will be a golden ball and a golden globe for acting for Neymar.
Oh, okay. you mean, yeah, the man who is so affected by a gentle breeze and the pull of gravity.
Yeah. Neymar, he's definitely winning some acting awards for this. I think they call them the Razzies.
Okay.
No, I don't know. That's a great question. I think it's really hard not to give it to the top scorer. So if England goes deep and Harry Kane wins a Golden Boot, he probably is the favorite for the Golden Ball. But I think who wins the tournament will have a lot to do with it. England is certainly in a good spot with all the upsets that we've had already. Some of the big teams going out. So I think they're in really good shape. I tell you, I felt so bad for Japan the other day because they played such a great game, a very plucky game. They give up, again, a kind of a lucky goal for Belgium, and then they give up the Fellaini goal, which just because Fellaini's like 19 feet taller than any Japanese player, and then they give up what I think is the perfect counterattack right at the death of the game to lose the game in regulation.
Oh yeah. It was textbook. I mean, you could not have drawn it up you couldn't have played it better on FIFA.
Yeah. It was an unbelievable counterattack, and it was both beautiful and terrifying to watch. Terrifying if you were wanting Japan to win, but a beautiful thing to watch, even down to just the fantastic run and the awareness of Lukaku to let that ball play through to the open player behind him. Just tremendous. So I don't know, Lee, that's a good question. I think we might have a better idea after the quarterfinals. We'll maybe revisit that. So thanks for the question. Let's take our questions from the Twits. I'm not calling our listeners Twits. That would be us. The folks on Twitter, that is. Let's say that. That's probably a nicer way to put it. And let's go down this list. Let's see. There's quite a list, too. And my computer's frozen. Nope, it's unfrozen. Woohoo! It's unfrozen like a caveman lawyer, Dave.
Oh, nice. Yeah, nobody's going to get that except you and I.
Old people, Phil Hartman fans, will get that. Okay, so let's start with, I don't know how to say this, Hadoken wants to know, Dave, what level or percentage of confidence do you have in the Lions after the All-Star match? Playoffs still in focus or just another Orlando Magic-type rebuilding year?
Boy, I tend to be a hopeful person, so until it's mathematically impossible, I'm gonna keep saying, you know, I'm Lloyd and the Dumb and Dumber going, so you're saying there's a chance. it could also go the other direction very easily, but now, you know, we've got the new coach. There's going to be, you know, guys fighting for positions. Hopefully, a new attitude. I'll stick in for now.
Okay, so what is your confidence level percentage wise with like 100 100% being completely confident that the teams will make the playoffs, and 0% being there's no way in hell they make the playoffs. Where do you kind of rank on the confidence scale?
Confidence scale. Well, after that little speech, I can't go too low, can I? So I'll say making the playoffs 65%.
All right. I'm going to go 50%, right at 50-50, because I have no idea how the locker room is going to respond to James O'Connor, and that will tell us a lot. If the locker room responds positively, then I think this team goes on and makes the playoffs. If the team doesn't embrace James O'Connor, then it could be a very, very long season. So we'll know. This is another question we should table.
See, and I actually completely agree with you, but after that little speech, I figured, well, I can't do 50-50. So
next question from EJ Manuel Miranda, who wants to know, who are some of the realistic offensive options should the Lions seek more help for Dwyer during the transfer window, or what change in tactics could be done to assist up top? Let me start this one. I'm going to say that realistic offensive options are going to have to be limited because of where the team is in terms of the cap. So I think that there's not going to be a big name brought in. There might be somebody in USL playing in the USL that maybe James O'Connor is confident can come in and provide what maybe Stefano Pino has not yet provided. So it might be somebody like that. Maybe even a guy like, I would say Dane Kelly, but he's already in the MLS with Washington or with DC United. A guy like that, though, at that level could potentially come in and be brought in, on the cheap to maybe potentially help out Dom Dwyer. But I really think it comes down to James O'Connor tweaking the offense. I think that's really what the important part will be in getting Dom some help. If James comes in and can diagnose the problems that this team's been having and fix them, then I think that you don't really need to bring in anybody else.
Indeed, and he may be able to do something with Pino. Figure out, the glitches there and get him back to the guy that was scoring, three goals against Orlando City. So, the development of the people we have, that's going to be the first option because as, Alex Littell said, hey, these are the guys. So, as far as change in tactics, I definitely see, now what they're going to be. That I don't know, but we do know that O'Connor has a definite more attacking style of play. Which lineup and formation he's going to roll out initially, that's going to depend on who's buying in and who isn't. And that goes back to what you said as far as who, what's going on in the locker room.
Yeah, I think tactically he just wants his offensive players to play creatively and free, and like Jeff Milby said, find the space. Get the ball to that player in the space and let them do their thing. I think under Jason, things were a little too slow and deliberate in the buildup. I think he's going to want to get rid of that. He's going to want to get rid of the doubt, get rid of the uncertainty, and just say, look, go play. This is fun. Get out there, find the spaces, and find each other. And I think just maybe that might be just enough to get this team back to scoring goals like it was during the 6-game winning streak. Thanks for the question, EJ Manuel Miranda. Chris Harder wants to know, who's the player we need to be expecting more from? I know it's hard, but who has exceeded expectations? So there's two questions here. Who should we expect more from, and who has exceeded expectations?
I think we can expect more from Sasha. I think that what O'Connor wants to do is going to hopefully free him up a little bit. So I think we can expect to see him, feel, like you said, feeling a little bit more free, just moving in the spaces. So I think we'll have that. And then the second part of the question was who's already impressing us. Mm-hmm. That's easy. That's Mueller. Just, the Energizer buddy, the nonstop, even though it's been a while since he scored a goal or anybody scored a goal, but his mentality on the field is his determination. It's absolutely what you want out of any player, let alone a rookie.
Yeah, I will agree with Mueller. He's exceeded expectations. Another guy I think has exceeded my expectations is Amro Tarek. I did not think that he was much more than a depth signing when he was brought in. I think he's at times been the team's best center back. At other times he hasn't been, but I think overall, if you look at the balance of his play this season, I didn't expect him to be the quality level that he's been this year. So I'd say Amro has exceeded expectations as well as Chris Mueller. Who should we be expecting more from? There's a lot of guys. I expected more from Stefano Pino. I expect more from Sasha Kljestan. Everyone expects more from Justin Merrum, and I think that this coaching change might end up being, you know, benefiting him the most. So we'll see. I am perfectly confident that if Justin Merrum starts to turn the corner on the field, that he can repair any you know, damage that's been done between him and the fans. The fans just want to win and they want good performances.
Yeah.
Once Justin Merrum starts giving them that, you know, he could become a crowd favorite.
It'll become a positive feedback loop.
If you remember, Antonio Nocerino had a lot of haters. And he won not everybody back mm-hmm. over, but he won a lot of those haters back, you know, back over the time that he was here. And I think the same is capable. Justin Merrum's capable of doing the same thing. In fact, if you go back to the opening game and the 1-1 draw with 10 men against DC United, nobody had anything bad to say about Justin Merrum after that game. Everybody was just in love with Justin Merrum after that game. But,
right.
You know, obviously he didn't quite work out in terms of the way, you know, he would like to in the case in the fans and the team. But not all of that's on him, because there is he plays a certain way, and that was known coming in here. I mean, if you watched Columbus a lot, you know exactly what you're getting in Justin Merrum. And, you know, we don't have Higuain. We don't have, you know, Ola Kamara, and, you know, we didn't have an Ethan Finley. These are different players, and he's got to get used to them, and they've got to get used to him. And we've seen any number of times him putting a ball into where he expects a guy to go, because he's been playing with those guys for years. And these new teammates are not the same. You know, Sasha's not an aggressive attacking player. He likes to sit back and pull the strings. You know, how many times have we seen him pass up shots that were wide open, let alone actually actively working to get into shooting position? But that guy coming up from behind used to be Federico Higuain. And that guy is always trying to score. So, yeah, there's
right.
a little bit of a difference there. And, you know, honestly, with guys being in and out of the lineup, it's not surprising that it's kind of surprising more haven't struggled from the get-go rather than just – you know, Justin and Pino and a couple other guys. But I think he's the guy that we should be expecting more from. And I really do believe that he can turn the corner if James can get everybody pulling the right direction, the same direction. And if he can win that locker room like I think he can, Justin Merrum's turnaround will bring the fans back on his side. That's just
one can only hope.
Yeah. So thanks, Chris, for the question. We appreciate that. Or the questions. On Twitter, Spot wants to know, tactically, will we see anything different to shore up the defense, especially against counterattacks? I'm glad you brought that question up, because that's actually something that O'Connor addressed in his press conference, that he believes that, you know, he says all the right things. He believes in attacking football. He believes in, you know, being aggressive, scoring a lot of goals, but he also believes in clean sheets. You know, the same thing that a lot of coaches say. But he also definitely brought in defensive responsibility. He brought it back around to that, and that was something that, you know, I'm sure he's well aware that this team gives up counterattacking goals. And I do think we'll see the team improve in that area. Because, you know, he was a central midfielder. He knows about transition defense, and that's – I mean, if you had to pick out one specialty of his, he's a guy. I don't even think he scored a goal for Orlando City when he played here. That's his thing is to break up play, and I think that he will bring that to the club. So it's going to be fun to watch that and to see how that develops. But certainly, you know, he's well aware of that, and I think tactically, it's something that the team is going to focus on.
Yeah, I've got nothing really to add to that other than, you know, I think it'll be good for, like you said, you know, the midfielder. So somebody like a Yuri Russell or Christian Nogueta, you know, they're going to get some very very personal attention in regards to, you know, their roles in that respect. And I think he might actually really like somebody like Higuita.
Yeah, his exact quote at the press conference was, it's trying to make sure there's understanding of defensive transition and what that entails, and then making sure the roles and responsibilities are laid out and that people can get a good understanding and then act on that, making sure they do that. So that sounds like what this team needs.
Yeah, it's very specific.
All right. What else we got? We got more Twitter questions. Our old staff writer, Brent, would like to know, in your opinion, is the loss of Tim Mulqueen a loss for Joe Bendick's development?
Well, you know, I guess that all depends on who they bring in, doesn't it? You know, good old Joey B has had a bit of a rough year this year, you know, as opposed to, you know, previously. So maybe some new blood, some new ideas helps him out. You know, maybe he had gone as far as he could with him and something, you know, in my business, oftentimes a new face and a new voice can help make the sale. And maybe that's what Joe needs.
Yeah. My first thought when reading this question was, I don't really like the way Bendick's developed this year. He's kind of gone backwards a little bit, in my opinion. So not all of it's his fault, but of course, we've seen some shots that he used to stop, not get stopped. I think there was a tough angle shot just this past week that went through his legs. That was not good. That should have stopped. But I think you're right. I think a fresh pair of eyes might be able to tweak a few things and get Joe back to the top of his form. So I don't think it'll be a big loss for his development. I think he was already kind of backsliding a little bit this season. It was not as good as what we've seen in the past. So thanks, Brent, for the question. Here's more. Jad Saab. I don't know, I was probably pronouncing that exactly wrong. On Twitter, wants to know, do you guys foresee James O'Connor maintaining the 4-2-3-1 in Orlando?
maybe.
We kind of talked about this a little bit. We'll see some of it, but we're going to see other shapes as well. And that's kind of exciting, in fact, because, you know, it's really... It's good and bad. When you're us and you're putting together your game preview and you're doing your projected lineup, it's nice to know what that shape's going to be. You know exactly who to plug in where. With, like, for example, if you just go back to last year when James brought Louisville City to against OCB, the two games against OCB, one time he lined up in a 4-2-3-1, and another time he lined up in a 4-3-3. And much of the year, he didn't line up in either of those particular shapes. So you'll see some 4-2-3-1, but you're going to see some other things. So that's about as good as we can answer that question.
Yeah.
Did Mark Johnson send us anything this week?
Not that I've seen. So, okay. But he's probably been pretty busy this week. So.
Okay. And we've also have not had any new 5-star reviews on iTunes, which means we are not a very good podcast, and you should not listen to us.
Why don't you love us?
Yeah. All right. So the thing there is, if you do enjoy us and you leave us a 5-star review and you write a review on iTunes with those 5 stars, we will read it on the air. So that's some incentive for you to do some things that actually help us in the rankings on iTunes, which is to rank us or rate us. And then leave us some feedback. So I invite you to do that. And if it doesn't have to be 5-star, but if you believe that we're a 5-star podcast and you do that and you write it, we'll read it on the air because, you know, we're just that
we're
shallow.
Cool like that.
We're just that shallow.
Or shallow, whatever.
All right, Dave. So thanks everybody for the Ask the Mainland Podcast questions. Again, you can hit us up on Twitter. We're at the Mainland. Hit us up with that hashtag AskTMLPC or email us at themainland@gmail.com. So we turn our attention to the Pride and Orlando City this weekend. Both teams are in action on Saturday, the afternoon game, 4 p.m. Eastern time. their first ever meeting with Los Angeles Football Club, Dave, but it will be a nightcap of the Pride at home against the Washington Spirit in game three of the three-game homestand, trying to salvage a game all of a sudden from this three-game homestand. Let's talk a little bit about the Spirit. This will be the third meeting, the first two both in Washington. They were split. Orlando lost the first one 2-0, won the second one 1-0. Again, Mallory Pugh still out for the Spirit. How do you see this one shaping up with Washington? Does the Pride, do they bounce back?
I think they do. I have a hard time seeing this team go, you know, three losses in a row. So they're going to get a result, hopefully the win. But I have just the pride of the Pride, their personal pride, is not going to, I don't think, would let them let that happen again, especially, like you said, with Pugh still being out. So and it being at home, I think there's an opportunity for the, you know, supporters to get out there since it's a 7:30 game and, you know, get to, you know, show a little love and maybe remind them that they still believe in them. And I think if you do, you'll get rewarded with at least a result and hopefully a win.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the Pride will bounce back in this one. I think they feel like they have a lot to prove. Maybe this is where we see the offense explode again, like it did at Chicago, with everybody getting on the same page after, you know, being shut out, and then the game before that, missing so many close opportunities. So maybe we'll see the Pride bust out with one of those games where Alex and Marta each get a brace. Who knows? I think that it's going to be tough because Washington is a pretty good defensive team, and they're very physical. And that's the kind of team that Orlando sometimes struggles with. But there have been games here where even against those types of teams, the Pride have broken through. So we'll see. And I really want to see Camilla on the field. That's what I want to see.
You listening, Tom?
Tom always listens. Everybody always listens.
Of course he does. Yeah, everybody.
We are adored by millions. Okay, so Orlando City will go to LAFC for the first time. Very formidable expansion club, LAFC, Dave, and a good home environment. Carlos Vela is out of the World Cup. Not sure if he'll be in the lineup yet after Mexico just got eliminated the other day. Probably a lot to ask of him, but a very, very good side. How do you see that one shaping up? What's your key matchup? What's your scoreline prediction? Dave?
Key matchup is unfortunately going to be, sorry about that, people. Sometimes you get the buttons wrong. Key matchup is going to unfortunately be the midfield. It's a lot's just going to depend on how James sends everybody out there. But, you know, they've got a good midfield. They're able to transition well, and they've been winning games. And they're at home, and we have to travel across the country. So my prediction is a 2-1 loss, but hey, we're back on the scoreboard, so take that as a good step.
Okay, that's interesting. One thing we do know is that as we record this, LAFC is in Houston in a long weather delay, so maybe they don't get back. Maybe that will help Orlando City a little bit. This is a tough team to figure out. If Vela doesn't play, they've still got Adama Diomande, who is the reigning MLS Player of the Week, had a hat trick last week, 7 goals on the season. Still got Diego Rossi, very good defensively with Laurent Simon. Just really, from front to back, a really tough team to figure that Orlando City will be able to go on the road and get points against on the West Coast. Orlando City yet to win in California. So, given the fact that James O'Connor will have only been in charge of the team since Monday, and they'll be traveling, spending that extra day on the road. In fact, I talked to the communications staff. They said that the team is not chartering for this game. So this is a commercial flight to L.A.
Isn't that a good thing, though? Don't they do bad when they charter?
They do bad when they go out early. But they're doing that.
Oh, okay. Oh. All right. Well,
I would try to get
my
team to just kind of roll up to the stadium as they, you know, just like fly in and then just kind of get in the cab and go right to the stadium and get on the field.
Or better yet, pilot, can you land right outside the stadium, please?
Or on the field and then take off and just, you know, that kind of thing. I'm going to say I'm going to say 3-1 Los Angeles. I think it's going to be a difficult ask for James O'Connor to do much after only 5 days. Probably still going to be a lot of question marks. It's probably still going to be a lot of in terms of, you know, those question marks are in terms of whether or not guys are starting to buy in. I don't know if you can get a buy-in in just a few days like this. And, you know, I think you're going to see a more gritty performance than what we saw against Atlanta, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be there yet. And I do think it'll be a struggle for the first few weeks, at least under James O'Connor, because, you know, mid season coaching changes don't just fix things instantly. I mean, even Brian Schmetzer taking over a very good Seattle Sounders team, it took a little bit for him to get that thing turned around. It took for him coming to Orlando to turn that around that year. In fact, if you go back and you'll read their quotes and say, yeah, that game really in Orlando really turned things around for us. You're welcome, Seattle.
Yeah, so happy to help.
So as for key matchups, I gave you my prediction without giving you my key matchups. I think it's going to be those guys, Rossi and Diamandi. Those are the guys that have to be kept in check. And I'm probably mispronouncing Adama's name. If I am, I apologize. I haven't gotten to see a lot of LAFC in recent weeks. I saw them quite a few times early in the season when he wasn't really featuring. So, but I've seen plenty of Diego Rossi, and I know what Carlos Vela can do. So this is a very good team. It's a team that can score goals, especially at home. I think they'll be good there. They come into the Houston game. I think they've won 3 in a row.
Plus actually, if you include Open Cup, I think it's 4.
So it's going to be a very difficult ask. So I don't see it going well. And again, I think stopping Adama and Diego will be the key for Orlando City. That's the key matchup. And then a secondary matchup on that field is can they get through that back line? That back line is a very good back line. The center backs are very good. You know, Bob Bradley was smart in the way he built that team with Walker Zimmerman and Lawrence Simon, two really outstanding MLS level center backs. So getting Dom between those guys and around those guys is going to be a chore. So that's your secondary matchup from me. So that's a bonus key matchup, if you will.
Ooh, bonus.
All right, Dave, should we put a bow on this? You got anything that you want to add? Any pressing Orlando City news that you want to get to?
Not that I can think of, but it's, as we mentioned at the very beginning, it's been one of those days for me. So don't count on my brain to be helping out right now.
All right, Dave's brain ball is busted, and he's leaking cortical fluid out of his ears. And so we'll put a bow on this thing. Please read our stuff at themainland.com. We'll have full coverage of both Orlando City and the Orlando Pride matches this weekend. I believe our own Jack McAwesome is going out to L.A. for this game, actually.
Oh, wow.
He's not covering it, but he's just going out as a fan. So that'll be kind of fun for him, hopefully.
And, you know, we maybe can get him to do something when he gets back and, you know, on his impressions and all that.
Yeah. All right. So read our stuff at themainland.com. Please like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. And where can they get you on Twitter, Dave?
I am at Mainland Dave.
And I'm at Mainland Michael. So it's really difficult to remember how to get a hold of us on Twitter. again, to subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever service that you use for your podcast. And leave us one of those 5-star reviews, and we'll get to it next week. We'll be back next week to break down everything. I mean, everything. We're just going to break down everything. We're just going to start at page 1 of Wikipedia and just go till it. we will be breaking down Orlando City, of course, at LAFC. We'll be breaking down the Pride and the Spirit. We'll be looking ahead to future games. We have so much soccer going on. We might, you know, if we have time, we might talk a little bit more World Cup. We haven't really done that, but you know,
we haven't had opportunity.
Who's had the time, really, to do that? It's been very busy. It's been very hectic, and you know, it won't be too much longer before we're back in U.S. Open Cup. July 18th will be that trip to Philadelphia for the quarterfinals, with a chance for Orlando City to potentially advance further than the club has ever been in the competition. And the weird thing is, if Orlando gets past Philly and the Chicago Fire stub their toe, it might be a big, huge reunion between James O'Connor and Bristol City in the semifinals.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And of course, maybe that gives us the advantage because he knows them so well.
Maybe, but
or maybe he just made them too good.
Or could be a big grudge match for them, and they want to show their old coach up. You know, I mean, that kind of happens. I mean, look, we haven't beaten Adrian Heath since he left.
<That's>
and
true.
It's not like he's had world beaters in Minnesota. I mean,
no,
that team is, you know, it has some talent, but it's realistically not a team that should be going on the road and beating Orlando City or very many other teams for that matter. So anyway, again, a big thanks to Jeff Milby, our old pal. It was so fun to catch up with him, and we wish him the best of luck in his endeavors. He's now in baseball, Dave, out in Richmond, Virginia.
Well, we all make bad choices in life.
I do.
I'm kidding, Jeff.
I do enjoy the baseball. In fact, minor league baseball is so much fun.
Actually, you're right. That's minor league baseball is a hoot.
I'm trying to think of anything else I need to get to before we sign off, because you know, it's going to be a week where we talk about this stuff. So one thing we got to do is make sure we've got it all buttoned up. Oh, you know what? The next time we next time we talk, we'll just have these two games to talk about. And then there's a Wednesday game next week. I think the Pride play at Houston.
So some more coverage on that.
So some midweek madness next week as the Pride will visit the Dash, looking for a little payback for what happened last week. Also,
absolutely.
Game. Don't like Wednesday night games, man.
The only thing I like about them is it means I've got something to write about.
Yeah. So, okay. So next week we'll be back. We'll break down Orlando City at LAFC, the Pride against Washington at home, and then we'll prepare you for the pair of Pride games coming up that week, next week. We'll have Toronto coming a week from Saturday here to Orlando. There's just so much soccer to talk. And we'll be back to do it all on behalf of David Rowe. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying go City and go Pride.